From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the second day of November 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. A bit later in the program, we'll check the weather forecast with Mark Russo at Risk Pulse in Chicago. And Greg Johnson will join us from the Andersons to talk about the cash grain situation. We'll also talk about demand for both corn and soybeans. Today, our special guest will be Ed Ussett, agricultural economist and commodity market specialist for University of Minnesota Extension. And it all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today, a penny lower. It finished at $3.97.5. The March at 4.01¾, 1.5 lower. And May futures down a penny and a half at 4.04½. July 4.06¼, down 1. Next year's December at 3.87¼, up a quarter of a cent. November beans, 5¾ lower. 10.50¾ the settlement price. January 10.52¼, down 4. And the July there at 10.42, down 1¼. Next year's November at 9.72, up 1. Bean oil, 42 cents lower. Bean meal down 3.50 for the day. Wheat futures finished the July up 6.5 cents at $5.99, though they were lower for the day at one point at 5.86¼. We'll check and see what the conditions were that caused that spread to change throughout the day. Live cattle futures in the December contract were 25 cents higher at 108.55. Feeders at 136.97½, 42.5 lower, and lean hogs up 37.5 cents at $65.95. Crude oil 88 cents a barrel higher for the day. Ethanol unchanged at $1.52 a gallon. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.10¼, up 2¾ cents. And the gasoline, the RBOB, on the wholesale price at $1.04 a gallon. That's about a penny and 0.7 cents higher. The Dow's up around 300 points. The dollar's up 0.1, and gold futures are up $14.30. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, to talk about the marketplace with us. Hey, Kurt, thanks so much. What a beautiful day it is.
You bet. It's supposedly going to warm up a little bit more and remain sunny for the rest of the week here, and finish up some harvest activity here as we go into the weekend here and hopefully get some field work done.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about what happened in wheat? I take it there was some rain in Russia that caused wheat futures to move around some.
Yeah, we're looking at weather forecast worldwide, Russia, and then in Argentina worldwide. But there's talk that China sold a large amount of wheat from the reserve and may have helped rally wheat prices off those lows. But I think it's more spread unwinding, positioning ahead of tomorrow's elections. A lot of uncertainty on what's going to take place. I found it interesting, as you visit with people with different ideas and views, that the depth of knowledge and what the candidate's agenda is not very deep at all. So I hope people take time to study the issues and the ramifications of moving forward in through here. Election results, as you know, probably won't be known for a while. There could be a short-term reaction, but if there's a change in policy, it's probably a little bit more longer-term versus short-term. So we'll have a little bit more knowledge of that as we move forward here. We've seen producers get hedged up, priced hopefully where they want to be. And then we've seen the end user come forward and see some fairly good coverage here going into the first part of next year. So hopefully everybody's positioned for what they want to see happen as we move forward. The biggest concern, though, is long-term, the ramifications of this COVID-19. We've got a lot of online studying and the future employment could be a little struggling here. And what I mean by that is we're lowering some standards to get these kids through school. And so hopefully these graduates, as we move forward here, will be qualified for these jobs waiting for when they graduate. So a lot of moving targets, subjects here, short term, of course, the election, and longer term, the fallout from the policy we've seen with the COVID strategies that's been incorporated.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the marketplace directly. Producers feeling like they should just leave the bin door locked? And if they are, is that really the case for corn?
Yeah, we've moved to the point now where guys have paid minimum storage. Last part of harvest, they still got some time to make a decision on that, or else they filled up the bin and kind of sitting tight. Strong basis. The bull spreads here indicated that the market wanted the grain, wants it now. We've had a lot of producers move grain and do a replacement strategy, particularly call spreads. The option volatility's picked up awful quite a bit here due to the uncertainty in the market movement. So just buying an outright option can be kind of tricky here to make that work. So we've done some covered positions to have some replacement strategies in case something happens in the southern hemisphere later on this growing season for them.
How do things look in the technical side of the market for both corn and soybeans?
Well, we had so-called sell signals take place here. We've had the momentum indicators roll over. We're starting to get down to the lower end through here. We had some daily reversals. We corrected to the downside here. Technically, the March corn kind of needs hold this 390 area. If it could do that, then maybe we'll be in a position to have some type of retracement back up to the upside. We've got these beans, January beans. They also recorded a daily reversal of downside last week and lower weekly close. So technically they've been a little toppy. We need to see January beans hold 1040. If we can do that, maybe we can have some type of technical recovery. A move below those levels will start to turn the longer-term indicators down.
Any indication from Iowa about how well the crops did in the derecho area? I think I saw something over the weekend from crops that were being harvested that was well over 200 in that down corn. I'm just wondering whether USDA had caught all of that and had it incorporated properly, or if there is an undertone that suggests that might increase at some point.
Well, that's a great question, and we're fixing to find out. Conversations with guys around there said it's a it's highly variable from area to area. Some had success picking the crop up. I've heard as low as 50, 75 bushels to the acre on corn, and as high as 180 in some cases on that down crop. I think that's kind of the moving target for Iowa. We'll have a crop update here in November. The numbers will incorporate a little bit more samples that's been taken in through here, and that's the key number to watch. It would be probably the Iowa production number. You know, as far as changing Chinese demand, I believe they stated that they're not going to probably adjust the demand a whole lot, but the numbers to look forward to here in November will be an update on yield prospects.
Any reason that we have to think about this afternoon's USDA weekly crop progress report? We should be nearly wrapped up, I would guess.
Yeah, the corn harvest expect to be 83%, beans 91% complete as a nation. Whenever you get down to that, the last 10% or so, you pretty well figure it's minor with the forecast we're looking at. There should be a whole lot of issues. Here through the central part of the Midwest, guys are off to doing some tillage now. Temperature's going to be low enough here. Hopefully get some gas on. The harvest progress went fairly smoothly. We maintained a pace above the average, so it went fairly well. And with the crop drying down like it did, it was a nice relief not to have to pay a big drying bill.
The price of fertilizer has dropped. Are you concerned at all that will put more corn acres in the ground next year?
December 21 corn futures are $4 plus. I think that's going to help keep the mindset to stick to some rotation, particularly here.
Hey, thanks so much.
Very good. Take care.
You too. That's Kirk Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. On this Monday afternoon, let's check in with Ed Usset. He's an agricultural commodity market specialist at the University of Minnesota for Extension there. Thank you so much, Ed, for being with us today. I do appreciate that. I take it you've been thinking quite a bit about what's been driving this market and come to the conclusion that it really is demand?
I have been thinking about this and talking with people, and I feel like sometime in the last 2 weeks, I finally wrapped my mind around this idea of a demand-driven market, which is different. There are different types of up markets. Something that is supply-driven, you've got a short crop. They tend to be very quick to adjust higher. It's, you know, it moves up quick. It's got a steeper angle, and it keeps moving up until the market gets comfortable with what that supply situation is. And then things sort of settle down. Demand-driven markets tend to be longer, stronger, more powerful. And by the way, the source of demand we're talking about here is one country, five letters, China. They have been on an incredible buying spree for corn and soybeans. We don't have a lot of competition, by the way, Todd. I, as many of your listeners do, get your daily farm doc in my email. And there's a great piece today by Keith Good talking about, demand, importers' need for corn and soybeans and so on, that I would point everyone there. But they've been buying strongly, and demand-driven markets tend to be longer, stronger, they're more powerful. Harder to know when the demand is filled, you know, like a supply problem. You finally come to the market, can come to grips with, okay, this will be the number of bushels we have to work with. But demand-driven, I don't know if they keep coming or not, you know. And so they tend to be a little more volatile. Accompanied by inverses or a narrowing carry. And I point your listeners, have you been watching the carries in the corn market? I like to watch the December-July carry every year, December being the first new crop contract of a new year, July being the last true old crop of the same year. And that not only have corn prices gone higher in the last 10 to 12 weeks, really, it's 3 months now. They've gone up for the last 3 months, but the carries have gone down. So you had a December-July carry of 25, 26 cents back in early August. That thing got down to a penny and a half at points last week. And when I finally, this is my frustrating part, I finally wrapped my mind around the demand-driven market, and it all fell apart last week, and we're off. I'm not saying it's the end of it, but we've had a correction here, quite a correction, 30 cents lower in corn futures, and the spread kicked back out, not to a wide spread, but from a penny and a half out to 8-9 cents this morning. Different market, and always hard to gauge where a demand-driven market comes to an end, because I'm not sure your piece this morning from FarmDoc was all about, well, how deep is this demand from China? Are they looking for 10 million metric tons? Are they looking for 20? Are they looking for 30 million metric tons? That's a big question.
Well, it seems like there are complicating factors here in the process, and maybe you can help walk me through it. One of them is about demand and an increase in demand from China, trying to plumb how much that increase is. And the other is whether it is just a shift in where China is demanding the crop from. So to fill the gap, so to speak, because of the late planting in Brazil, they're four to 6 weeks behind, which would put their, should put their exports availability 4 to 6 weeks behind. So how do you balance those two things out? Is there really new demand, do you think, from China? It seems like that's the case. But is the United States picking up some exports because of the lag time or the gap time as well?
There's a little bit of both at play there, but I think the market is trading new demand. And what is interesting to me is how markets can change in just 2 to 3 months. This was not on our radar in August. It was just not on our radar. And all of a sudden, there's been this realization, quicker for some, slower for others like me, that, hey, there's something going on here. And they're buying a lot of corn. And China is buying a lot of corn. And the soybean demand has been good. So I guess it's a little of both, because we're hearing that the supplies are not available from South America, and that, of course, steers it our way. This is a seasonal thing that happens every year, frankly. Our export sales, particularly of soybeans, are in the first 6 months of our crop year, because after that, South America comes into play with their own new crop. So we've got a little bit of both going on, but I think the market, with as strong and as powerful as this rally has been, is trading the idea of new demand we hadn't thought of before.
Oh, it'll be wonderful to talk with you again in another month and see if that's changed. Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Hey, you're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Ed Ussid is with the University of Minnesota, where he serves as an agricultural economist with Extension. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mark Russo. He's at Wrist Pulse in Chicago. Hey, good afternoon to you, Mark. Thanks much for being with us. I do appreciate that.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Tell me a little bit about this rainfall that fell across Russia that wreaked havoc for a while today in the wheat market.
Yeah, the Russia winter wheat rainfall that commenced late last week on Friday, continued over the weekend, and still ongoing here today. It's all associated with a upper-level low pressure system that got cut off from the main jet stream flow. Actually, some similar characteristics as what we saw in the plains, in the southern plains, hard red winter wheat belt last week, with the slow moving system and thus more widespread rains. Now, in Russia here, following this event, which is going to encompass the vast majority of acreage with amounts generally ranging from like 15 to 35 millimeters, so kind of 1.5 to 1.5 inches in general, we do see drier weather returning to the region. But with that said, it's been a major precip event and very timely here for the Russia winter wheat belt.
Turn your attention to South America. Begin in the southern tip and work your way northward, I suppose, in Argentina through Brazil then.
Yeah, actually, the pattern for Argentina and southern Brazil is going to be pretty similar for the next couple of weeks. In fact, there's only one rain opportunity associated with a frontal passage coming up about a week from now. That rain opportunity looks to be more of a kind of a moderate event, so not a very dry event, but then not all encompassing either in Argentina or southern Brazil. So when you add up the rains with that event, and compare that to what should fall during the first 15, 16 days of November, this first half of the month is going to register below normal across those areas. But the focus of attention is on that rain event. It really starts to kick in for Argentina about next Sunday and Monday, and then a day or two later moves into southern Brazil. That's going to be the focus of attention. And as we go through time, does that rain event here look better, or does it stay the same or even get worse? Now, up in northern Brazil, center-west region, the pattern for the next 2 weeks will feature dry conditions this week, but that looks to change next week, as we do anticipate rains to return to Mato Grosso and Mato Grosso do Sul and Goiás next week. So a temporary break in the rains this week, but we don't see that lasting very long up there, and rain activity we feel will return as we go through next week.
It appears that the teens that we suffered through last night here in Champaign County, other parts of the Corn Belt as well, will disappear now for at least a week. Can you tell me about conditions in this part of the world?
Yeah, we're seeing very mild temperatures work its way from west to east across the Midwest today, and this is going to be the start of a milder pattern that looks to be in place basically through the early part of next week. And temperatures unseasonably warm, that will equate to highs in the 60s, even some 70s coming up by late this week and over the weekend. And then it'll be followed by a cool down during the early to middle portion of next week. But you know, not as cold as what we've seen here in recent days. But you know, this unseasonably warm stretch looks to last by about 5-6 days.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He's with Risk Pulse from Chicago, Illinois. Now let's turn our attention to the cash grain market. We're joined by Greg Johnson. He's at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. What a beautiful afternoon it is, Greg. I bet farmers are, well, I don't know how much they're doing yet in the field. Maybe you can tell me that as far as harvest goes, but anxious to get maybe some fall field work done too, I would think.
Yes, I think we've gotten a lot of people finished up over the weekend. Every day we should finish up a few more people. There's still a fair amount out there, you know, 10% left out there, but that's going to go by quickly if this forecast is right. We should finish up a lot of people maybe by the end of the weekend.
Were they happy with the yields?
You know, it was about what we expected. We thought we had a record bean crop on August 1st, and then with the dry August, farmers realized or expected that they would not, you know, have the record yield, and they were good. They were probably our third best crop ever, but they were not a record crop. You have to have rain in August. Hurt the corn a little bit, too. The one thing that we've noticed and farmers have commented on is the corn on corn yields are down significantly versus corn following bean yields, probably anywhere from 20 to 50 bushels less on the corn on corn this year. And that's not just here in central Illinois. I was on a conference call this morning, and across the Midwest, that seemed to be the common refrain, was that corn on corn yields, for whatever reason, really took a big yield drag this year.
What does the basis for corn look like at this point?
We finally have gotten the basis levels and the spreads narrow enough to where it was incenting farmers and elevators not to put corn in the bins, but to actually move it. So basis levels have been extremely strong all during fall harvest, going up every week from, I think we started at 25 under the December and got all the way to 5 under the December, and now we're finally starting to see the processors finally buying corn, getting enough to fill the pipeline, and so we've seen basis levels back off about a nickel. They're still extremely strong, but I think the upward momentum, the non-relenting march higher, I think we've finally come to a halt in that, and maybe we've stabilized here at these levels.
Yet the carry has come out of the marketplace.
Yes, there's a little bit of carry in the market now, but at one point, December, March, May, July corn all was trading at the same price. Today, July corn's about 8 cents higher than December. So there's a little bit of carry, but not much, but certainly better than zero.
Anything on the bean side?
Bean basis continues to be extremely strong. Processors are paying that 10 to 15 over range for soybeans. Farmers have done a very good job, in my opinion, of selling beans once they got over $10. Farmers have sold two-thirds to three-fourths of the beans at good levels. So that's kind of kept the pipeline full on beans for now. And we'll have to wait and see how the South American weather progresses and whether the Chinese demand continues or not. If either one of those runs into a problem, we could have a very interesting, tight situation later on this spring and summer.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons. He joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.